Now, prior to that, my father was working for Rank and People Company since 1985. Must have been in the late 20s. In the late 20s. And also, since I went to Sacramento High School between 1923 and 1927, I had many friends from Sacramento. I used to go visit there. So as far as the people of Sacramento Island are concerned, I got to know them pretty well, especially during this period when I was in practice there.
Where did you receive your education?
I went to UCLA from 27 to 29. I went to Berkeley, 29-30. Then I went to Creighton University, School of Medicine in Omaha, Nebraska. And I got my MD in 34.
So at the time that you were at Terminal Island, were you, you had a general practice?
Yeah, it was a general practice.
So you saw a lot of everything.
Yes, I did, but let's see. I don't know just how that would fit in with what you're asking, because it was all limited to illnesses, you know.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm interested in psychogenic disorders mainly, and psychogenically called disorders. Well, how was it that you chose to work at the Indigapis community? Or was it actually a choice?
Well, yeah, I guess it was. In those days, Japanese doctors, or Japanese American doctors, their practices were limited more to their own people. And it was only during my practice I noticed that gradually I got more and more non-Oriental patients, and about the time the war broke out, I think my practice consisted of about 50-50. And on Terminal Island, there were approximately 2,000 Vietnamese people living there in a very small area of about a half a square mile. You just can't imagine how densely populated that place was, because the neighborhoods were, for example, here's a block, there's an alley down the middle here, and these houses were owned by the canneries. They were camps. For example, let's say there's an address of 220 Terminal Way, let's say Terminal Way. And this would be Canary Street. Canary Street. The 220 Terminal Way, they'd be A, B, C, D, E, F. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six families. You see?
So it's much more.
Then 222 or 224 would be the same way. It's just very densely populated. And over here in Canary Street would be the same thing. Let's see, 221 Canary Street. It has to designate whether it's A, B, C, D, or E, or F. Usually there are six to seven houses in each row. So you can just imagine how densely populated that one area was compared to the present homes, where you just have one home here and maybe a lot going all the way back to the you see?
So is that like the conditions of the concentration camp?
Well, yes, except that there wasn't a camp. There was no barbed wire around there. And we were living there. They were living there by their own choice, because they were working. For example, Mr. A here has a fishing boat. And he worked for a certain cannery, maybe say Van Camp. And his family lives there. He's out fishing. Maybe Mr. B here might be working for Mr. A on his boat. Okay? And his family is living there. The wives may be working in the cannery, packing or cleaning the fish and so forth. And the whole economy of this area was tied up to the cannery. The several canneries, there must have been, French sardine, nine cans, two cans. And they had Franco-Italian, other seafood, Delmonic. There must have been six or seven canneries along the wharf there. Have you ever been over there?
No.
Well, the canneries are still there. The canneries are still there, but they're not nearly as active as they used to be before. And like I said, there were about 3,000 approximately. Now, I don't know just what the real figures are, but I'd say approximately 3,000 persons of Japanese ancestry living in an area of just a half a square mile, I would say.
So it was dominantly Japanese.
It was all Japanese.
It was all Japanese.
I don't know of any non-Japanese that lived in that area. Now, there were some non-Japanese living in Terminal, which was about a mile away from there. And there were also some Japanese living there, too, and many Filipinos. But they had a Japanese school, a regular L.A. Primary school on Terminal Island, which was 99% Japanese. Maybe there must have been three or four non-Japanese there, Caucasians. And these Caucasian kids could speak Japanese just as fluently as the Japanese kids could. You know, when they were playing, they would talk to each other.
It was a Japanese.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was an American school under the Los Angeles State School District, but the pupils were all Niseis, from the fishing colony, and they spoke Japanese at home. They spoke English at school, but it was sort of a 50-50 thing. They had to speak Japanese as well as English. Very unusual community. And this school was a very picturesque one. They had a beautiful Japanese garden in there that was built by the fishermen on their time off. And they had a very good rapport between the teachers and the community.
So you'd say from all of this that Terminal Island is unique as far as the Japanese community in the United States.
Yes. It was like a little fishing village in Japan transported over here and placed on Terminal Island. And the only difference some of the difference would be that they spoke English as well as Japanese. And the business was controlled by the non-Japanese. Although they had one cannery that was started by a Japanese group. It was thought that they were very pro-Japan, the people on Terminal Island. And they used to celebrate all the festivals, like the May 5th, the Boys Festival. They put up all these big fish, that I don't know whether you're aware of those things or not.
I've seen them in the
movie. Yeah. And it was very picturesque.
Did they ever have investigators come in?
Oh, absolutely. I appeared on a TV talk show. That was this year in regard to this evacuation thing. And at that time, it was Sandy Campion's show on it was an FM station. And it was on TV, too. And at that time, I told him that after the war started, all of the men on the FBI list were picked up. just within a few hours, they were all rounded up and taken over to the immigration station and placed into custody.
So they were very much aware of their location.
Yeah. And at that time, we found out, or the men that were picked up, found out that some of the men that worked in the cannery and they turn around the pool halls and play pool with them and so forth. So fluent Japanese. And they didn't know it. So they had infiltrated this area, and apparently they'd been doing it for some time prior to the outbreak of the war. So that they had a pretty good idea of who might be potentially subject.
It's like a blacklist.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And this also caused a lot of anxiety, too, because, for example, a person who was not picked up, he was on pins and needles waiting for them to come after him, you know.
Were they aware of this before the evacuation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because the war started on December the 7th, at around 11 something in the morning, specific time. And by that evening, they had rounded up hundreds of them. You see, in Terminal Island, being an island, at that time there were no bridges. They had a ferry going back and forth over here between San Pedro and Terminal Island. And then over here they had a bridge that came onto to the island. They had no bridge between San Pedro and Terminal Island like they have now. So there were only two entrances or exits to the island. That was the ferry building and the bridge. And right after the war started, they killed these off. But some of my friends, I played golf that morning at Lakewood Country Club, and some of my fellows stayed for a second round. And I came back to the island on December the 7th because I had office hours Sunday, even on Sunday. And I came back, and those fellows that stayed for a second round, they couldn't get back on the island because they were cut off by the mud. Hey, John? Yeah, you know, shut it off. They rounded up all those people. Mm-hmm. And so those that were left behind, who apparently were not on any blacklist, you know, the FBI didn't bother them. And, for example, my father was a nervous wreck because he had a suitcase packed waiting for them to come after him, but no one did, you see? And, considerable anxiety because of that.
Did you say this caused enough distress, well, during the time that it was known that there was, they were infiltrated on the island?
Well, I don't think that they even thought about it at that time. You know, after all, there was a war on, and you don't question the FBI people that come around at that time. You know, of course, they're distressed because of the wives and the families of these fishermen and the men who were taken in. They didn't know just what's going to happen to their father or husband. They didn't know where they're going to be taken. When they'd see them again, you see. And some of them I think they were transported from the immigration building to some holding detention camp someplace in the hills. And from there, they were shipped to other camps throughout the United States. Not the assembly centers, not the relocation camps that we went to. See, they had separate ones for them.
Like Tule Lake?
Well, Tule Lake was initially a relocation center, but then not even like Tule Lake. See, these camps were like in Crystal City, Texas, and in New Mexico. They hadn't been even in Oklahoma and Wyoming, New Orleans. They had them all over in South Dakota. And these were internment camps that contrasted relocation camps. But they were all concentration camps, you know. you know, they're trying to put a nice name on to them, calling them relocation centers and assembly centers, but they're a concentration camp. They have barbed wire around the fences. They extended the fences up high, so they put barbed wire on them. They had guard towers at various intervals, and they had fellows up there with a machine gun and a searchlight.
Yeah. I went on the last month when I was pilgrimage.
You went?
Yeah.
You went on that, Yeah.
Well, I've heard a lot about concentration camps and the relocation centers, but I wasn't exactly sure, you know, how they were operated. I was still wondering if you noticed any marked difference between the mainland Japanese as opposed to the Terminal Island Japanese.
Well, in what way?
Psychologically. I was wondering if there are any medical records as to, you know.
There's no physical difference. There's no physical difference.
I'm interested in.
No illnesses that are peculiar to Terminal Island that you didn't have anywhere else. But the people on Terminal Island were very close-knit. There were three big groups of Japanese people there, and they came from three provinces in Japan. One is Mieken. The other is Shizuoka, and the other one is Wakayama. Now, there were others there, but then by and large, the largest group of the fishermen and their families were from these three provinces, prefectures. And a reason for that being that even in Japan, these three prefectures were noted for their fishing industry. You know, they were fishermen from way back. They probably learned the trade from their parents, and they came over here to, in all probability, to try and start a fishing business over here. So, being from three prefectures and living together, you know, in a small area like that, of course they were much closer than the other Japanese, you know, like living in Los Angeles. You lived in the West Side, you don't even know who lived two doors away. But here, in Terminal Island, they knew each other. And not every other person was a short-tailed relative or something, you know. So, in that respect, they were different from the rest. They were all hard workers. They were all honest, good people.
I was wondering if there were, mental disorders were more prevalent, mental related disorders were prevalent more on the
I don't think so. I think they were less prevalent because they didn't have the problems before the war. They didn't have any problems. They were working for the cannery, and as long as they were catching the fish, they had them. Their wives were working for the cannery. Even if their boat didn't be catching the fish, maybe the wives made enough money to tide them over, you see? So, their life was pretty simple down there.
It was just like the way they live in Japan.
Yeah, it was simple, and there was no anxieties. Very little. I don't recall any patient who went berserk prior to the war.
So, did you do any work with the mainland Japanese?
You mean, I have patients from Long Beach, right here, from Wilmington, and San Pedro, and even as far away as Orange County. I used to go out and make calls before the war. See, my practice was not limited to Terminal Island. About 50% of my patients came from off the Terminal Island, especially the non-Japanese.
Did you notice any significant difference between your patients other than the Terminal Island?
You mean from a medical point of view?
Yeah, right.
From a medical? No.
Well, not as far as... Well, as far as psychogenic diseases go,
no, of course, I didn't even take care of any mental problems. You see, you know, being a GP, if I felt that any ability, I would control. But still, I can't recall of anyone I had to refer to a psychiatrist. In those days, it wasn't fashionable to go to a psychiatrist like it is now. You know?
Were there any mental counseling institutions that were primarily made for, set up for Japanese Americans?
Before the war?
Yeah.
I don't believe so. Not in Terminal Island. I can't think of any. Counseling? There might have been, but I certainly was not aware. And not specifically for the Japanese Americans, I'm sure.
Are you familiar with some of the writings by Stanley and Dale C., the two psychologists, Chinese psychologists, that have done quite a bit of research? Or Harry Kitano? And you wrote a paper.
I haven't heard the name Harry Kitano.
Yeah, he wrote a piece on the mental health of Japanese Americans.
Mm-hmm. And who are his subjects?
I can't quite remember off the time. He took sources from here and there. Because mainly what he did was he observed the family, Japanese family, the tradition, and then the traditional Japanese as opposed to the new Asian American, and the problems each one of them might face.
What did this
what did he say? Well, he says that, traditional Chinese or Japanese are less apt to go to seek psychiatric help, because it's in a way it's like a no-no, traditional medication.
Well, this is true. That's why I say it's not fashionable nowadays. You know, they think psychiatric counseling is a thing, but in the old days, they just didn't. I don't know whether the problems were simpler in those days or what. They're certainly not simpler now. They're much more complex, I guess, now than they were in those days. But still, I was not aware of any.
Was there any real difference between the habits or the traditions of the Japanese on Terminal Island compared to those on the mainland? No, they both experienced two different things.
I think the group, Yes, I'll say this much. On Terminal Island, they were more like I say, it was like a transplanted Japanese village.
Right.
And they had judo, judo school. They had a group kendo school, and they had some private classes and ikemana and things like that. It was more like a village in Japan, and certainly it was more popular on Terminal Island, I think, that it was in in Los Angeles, although they had those schools there too, but they had to draw their pupils from a bigger area, whereas I think they were all concentrated right there, and it was much more of a close-knit, what do you call that, camaraderie, I don't know what you call it, you know, it was a smaller group, and I want to mention that after the war started, we had a total blackout. I guess we had it all over the Southland, but I'm telling you, it was pitch black at night. You couldn't show a light. And like going from my office to my home on a night when there were no moon out, I could hardly find my way. It was so dark. You hold your hand in front of your face and you can't see it, you know, it's so dark. And then one night, it was the latter part of February, I think it was around the 26th of February, 1942, when we were awakened about, it must have been about 2 o'clock in the morning, by guns shooting all around us. And so I got up and looked outside and went, didn't even know they had any anti-aircraft batteries around there, but they were shooting at something up in the sky. You probably have heard or read about this. This happened on February 25th or 6th. And we went outside and you see searchlights, you know, going way up in the sky. And somehow, because it was so far away, we couldn't even tell what it was. But allegedly it was Japanese aircraft, you know, allegedly. But it later turned out that it was an escape flight, a balloon or something. And at any rate, people in Long Beach were even could see them, could see the searchlights and so forth. But the following morning, was it the next day, they came out with the we had to evacuate the island in 48 hours. Did you know about that? We only had 48 hours to get off the island with our belongings. And this was, of course, the worst thing that the people in Terminal Island experienced. It was much worse than anything that was experienced anywhere else. Even up in Seattle, they had to evacuate some island up there, but they had no time. At any rate, within 48 hours, they had to clear off, and many people weren't able to pack up their things, and they just left them. And during this time, a lot of these secondhand leaders came on the island, and see, this was in December, and it was close to, you know, some people had bought their Christmas presents already, like a big radio or a portal, what they call it, orthophonic phonograph, and even had stereo in those days, I think it was beautiful, big phonographs and so forth, paid several $100 for, and they were offered $10, $20 for them. And, and the women, you see, the men folks were all, many of them were rounded up, and those families had no man, and the women, with maybe small kids, they didn't know what to do. You see, it was every man for himself. He had to see that his family was taken off the island, and his possessions were all safely tucked away. I had to pack up my office, my home, in my parents' home. But fortunately, as soon as I heard that, I called up Beacon Grant. And so they came down and they took everything away from me.
The most Japanese couldn't afford that time.
Well, they could. Sure, they could afford it, but they couldn't get them. You know, some of the friends and churches and various organizations sent trucks down there to help, you know. But even then, that was not enough. And my mother came from articles that I had made in school, you know, like a little table and stuff like that. And rather than giving to a gentleman or someone to a gentleman, she just burned them up. Made a fire and she just burned everything up.
That's what a lot of Japanese
get. Yeah. But that was a very sad situation. We, a large group of them went to Los Angeles. They were taken in by various churches and temples. You know, they used their facilities and stuff on the floor and so forth.
This was before
Before? Oh, no, this was after.
After?
Yeah. Oh. See, Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 41.
Right.
And this was in February of 42.
Oh.
February the 5th or so, plus minus one day, 42. And we had to get off the island by, I think February the 28th it was, at the deadline. And after that, there were no Japanese temples on the island.
It was expected.
Mm-hmm. Not in 48 hours. We expected that we had to go to camp. You know, and we heard that they were getting the centers ready. But we had to move twice. We had to get off the island and then go into camp.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a trauma.
So. Okay, how is, I asked you about the social structure of the island, right? How is that compared to maybe, to the mainland social structure? I know that they're more separate, there's less dense on the mainland than on the island.
Well, I guess the social structure, and what do you mean by the social structure?
Well, how did Japanese manage to get together? Did they get together?
Oh, they were together all the time. I mean, they couldn't help but get away from each other. You see, the way they were living, like...
On the mainland.
How did they get together on the mainland?
Yeah, or did they?
Well, I imagine they got together at church and at temples and the various clubs. The YMCA, YWCA clubs and Boy Scouts and the various organizations, brought those people together. The same thing on the island. Of course, they had a big fishermen's organization, the Japanese Fishermen's Association. And they used to have Japanese plays and hats and something like Waterville Come Down, intervals. We show movies at intervals down there. Everybody went to those. They have judo and kendo, tai with other groups from other parts of the country, and then even from Japan. Sometimes if they come over, they used to have tournaments. They had a football team, Turtle Island football team. They had baseball team, the Japanese Turtle Island Skippers, or Santito Skippers, they called them. A very fine team. And they had a lot of spirit, you know? And fishermen are all, you know, it's a physical work. They're all husky. Healthy, strong men, and they, I remember one time they had a football game in Los Angeles with some team. They got into a fight, and you should see, the next week they went up there, and the fishermen went up there in truckloads carrying baseball bats and so forth. And that's the thing they learned, they should never pick on a Terminal Islander. No, they stuck together. Even
a lot of unity.
Yeah. Even has a Terminal Islander, the organization. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's a very active organization. It's only been in existence for, I would say, 5 or 6 years. And they have, I'm one of the members. They admitted me as one of the Colonel Island. And we have golf tournaments. And very good ones, you know. A big turnout. They come from far away, Northern California, to participate in the old external island.
That must be when there was a heck of a lot of unity.
Yeah. And we had a New Year's party on board the Queen Mary. And it was, I never saw so many people, you know, hundreds. There must have been 500 people there. They're all going around greeting each other. You know, they're scattered, but then they all come together at that time.
Did mainline Japanese have that opportunity?
No, not that much. You see, they have these kind of picnics. You know, like Shizuoka 10, Hiroshima 10, various prefecture has picnics in the summertime, and that's when they get together, I guess, and visit the old friends and relatives. But in Terminal Island, like I say, there were these three prefectures primarily, and they all, you know, are together, so it's a huge group, To some stragglers like myself who are not from any one of those.
Well,
my parents,
you did reside on.
Yeah. I've been there. And I, in fact, I was married in May of 41. Just 7 months before the war started.
Are there any records, medical records, that I could get a hold of?
Medical records?
Yeah.
You can get a hold of medical records because that's the privilege of communication.
But are there any manuscripts or anything that I could take a look at?
On Terminal Island?
No,
I don't think so. There are only two doctors there. Myself, there was Dr. Kimura, who was passed on. He was practicing up in San Jose after the war. And that was Dr. Okami, who was practicing in Long Beach here. He was in Utah, and then he came back to Long Beach. And there are no published articles about medical articles about those people at all.
Any references I could find about the Japanese on the mainland?
In regards to the war years, and pre-war and the war years, have you read any books on this?
I've read the.
What have you read on it?
Well, the general issues of immigration.
There are a lot of books. My oldest son, who's a doctor, is also likes to write. And he's actually his primary work is writing and secondary is doctor. And he was studying on this. And he took all of my books. He must have taken about 6 or 7 books that I have. But there are many, let's see. You say the Quiet American.
I think I've heard of it.
Terry McLaurin wrote one. Prejudice. I think Terry McLaurin. Let's see. there are so many. I can't think of the title. Huh?
Dr. Paul,
on the phone?
Yes.
At that time, they were very bitter. But, now, in my situation is different from that of the ordinary person, a fisherman on Terminal Island, and that as a doctor, I continued to work as a doctor, even in care. You see? Whereas a lawyer or a businessman, they wanted to camp, and they had nothing to do. And they were very frustrated. Some of them had gotten jobs working on camouflage nets or something like that. But in my case, I was still young, fairly young. I was just turned 31, and young, in good health, and my wife was pregnant, and I had my parents, father and mother, and they were in pretty good health, and so it didn't bother me nearly as much as another person, you know, that's not a doctor. And we went into camp, and we set up the hospitals and treated these people, inoculated all these people. There were only six doctors in San Anita Family Center. We had over 18,000 people there. And we had to inoculate all of them. And we had to take care of all of their ills. Anything that was too big for us to handle, we send them to the county hospital.
So actually, your way of life wasn't really offered that much.
No, except that I didn't get any money for it. $15 a month, working day and night. And otherwise, you know, it was kind of a challenge. Because, we were a captive group of people. They had to come to us whether they liked us or not. No, they didn't get to choose their doctor. So we worked like a chicken. And we had plenty of work to do. We didn't have to worry about meaning or anything like that, because we didn't have it.
The pressures of an ordinary life like today are just as great as,
you know, I guess. I guess so. Actually, it was all work and not too much worry, you know, in camp for us. And in early, when you're 30, 31 years old, and you're still eager to learn, it was good for us, I think. It was good for me.
So then you felt, well, you were nowhere enraged by the relocation of all these Japanese?
Well, sure. I didn't like the idea of them taking away my freedom and putting me in a camp. But in those days, not like now, people didn't have as much understanding of race and so forth. We were just a chap, and by golly, we did what we told you to do, you know?
You think that the camps might have benefited the Japanese?
I don't see how. They tried to say that it might have benefited them, but how? In what way? Certainly not in a financial way, because, you know, they lost everything. These people lost thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I had, in my own loss, and then pretty high, $20,000-$30,000. And inexperience, well, when you balance it all out, no, I don't think it benefited. I don't think they thought that they would spread the Japanese out all over the country, but